Shut up and sit down.
It is another hockey podcast here on the Breakfast with Ben's podcast with Brian Metzer, the Pittsburgh Penguins radio network. You can listen to Mets pregame, postgame, and intermission whenever the Pens are back in action, but that won't be for a while. We've got the full offseason to go for them. Hockey is still going on. We'll get to the conference final matchups in just a little bit. But Mets, I do want to focus on the Pens at least to start. I want to focus on the GM search because it sounds like at least one big name is being subtracted from the equation and maybe two familiar names are being added to it. At least that's based on what I've seen anyway from some reporting that came out from Pierre LeBrun. It's Kyle Dubas, who very well may not be in play anymore, the Toronto Maple Leafs general manager, who had a press conference yesterday after the Leafs were bounced in the Eastern Conference playoffs by the Florida Panthers. And he said if he is back as a general manager somewhere next year, it'll be the Leafs or nowhere. So if we take him at his word, he's out. But Jason Karmanos, a former assistant with the Pens, is apparently somebody that might be in the mix, according to LeBrun. And Peter Chiarelli, who was the general manager in Edmonton and Boston, may be in the mix as well. What do you make of those two names, and what do you think about the Dubas situation?
When I hear Peter Chiarelli's name, I feel like Luke Skywalker clinging to the pole, finding out Darth Vader is his father. I have no interest in him. No, it can't be. I'm not that intrigued by that possibility. Excuse me. I think some of the names that have come up, I don't know if it's just people that make the rounds in these conversations. I mean, Mark Bergevin's name is involved in all this kind of stuff, which is kind of crazy. But for me, Tim, I mean, I'm not surprised to hear Jason Karmanos' name. I mean, he has ties to the organization, at least the people that are there in the infrastructure, maybe not the ownership group now and the management team that they hope to build, but he has a lot of experience. He is a cap manager to a certain extent. He knew analytics pretty well. That was part of what he was involved with under Jim Rutherford. So that seems to be something that the Fenway folks are interested in. I still don't know what to make of this Dubas situation. I mean, money talks too. So if they are in a situation where they really wanted him, they certainly could throw some cash at him. But I was intrigued to hear those names. I just hope Peter Chiarelli's not necessarily getting to the finish line here in terms of the conversations. You haven't had a chance to talk to Eric Tolsky yet, who's a guy that I know that his name has made the rounds a lot. And I think part of that has to do with when you look at the people who are trumpeting his name,
there's peers.
Not that it's not. Yeah, exactly. People that were like, I used to DM with him, Tim, when he worked for SB Nation, all that kind of stuff, which is kind of interesting because I know we have a couple people that have climbed up the ranks in the Penguins org. I mean, Eric Heasley is one of them that started from not being a hockey ops guy. He was a PR guy right out of college and kind of did that before he got a job in hockey ops with Ray Shiro. But he was never an SB Nation blogger become GM. So I don't know how I feel about that either. That's kind of an odd situation. And it is fun to watch the guys who are hyping him up. I think that's why they know him. You know, they're like, hey, we know this guy. We used to deal with him.
Yeah, maybe it could be their path as well, I think, is what they're thinking on some level or another. It could be me.
I can get a job, right?
Yes, precisely.
Yeah, Tim, I mean, you could get sucked right in. You probably had Twitter fights with this guy at one point or another, and now he could give you a front office job at the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Oh, boy, that would be big for me. I would love to work under a hockey blogger. So you're anti-Chiarelli, huh?
I put it this way. Not so much based on what he did when he was in Boston. I mean, he did some good stuff there. He did not do good things in Edmonton.
No.
And that was a very intriguing situation when he was there. I mean, his final signing before moving on, wasn't it the Mikko Koskinen, the goaltender that he gave way too much money to, and the guy never really even lived up to the hype for one season and ended up going back to Russia whenever the contract finally ended. That was his parting shot across the bow. So I wasn't overly impressed with him with the work he did there. I mean, he's a hockey guy. He has experience. He's been around for a long time. But if you're going to go for somebody that you had ties to, I did like to hear Jason Botterill's name be involved still. He is somebody that very quietly did do a good job in building the Sabres to where they are right now. I know he ended up losing that job, and he had some issues with a petulant Jack Eichel at the time, who finally seems to be putting it all together in Vegas a little bit. But he did make the Tage Thompson deal. He identified that there was something there and was able to bring him in, a piece that the St. Louis Blues had seemingly given up on in the Ryan O'Reilly situation. So that's somebody I'm intrigued by. And I still think there could be something. I know I mentioned the Dubas thing already. Just because he said, you know, I'm going to be in Toronto or nowhere. People do this crap all the time. I mean, you and I have dealt with management people in sports long enough to know that you can almost never believe exactly what's coming out of their mouth. It wouldn't shock me if suddenly there's at least a conversation or they still reach out to him, just because there was so much smoke to that before he finally became available. I know he tried to put that out yesterday, but that could be a negotiating tactic as well.
Well, if the stress of the situation and the strain on the family was such to the point that that might be the reason why he doesn't come back to Toronto even, I don't know if coming to a place where they started chanting fire Hextall in the middle of the season and didn't stop is necessarily going to be one where he feels all that welcome.
Could it be like Tommy Maddox? They would dump trash on his lawn, you know, go back
to
those days.
Trash back at them, those water bottles that he's chucking around all over the press box.
I know. And the funny thing is, I saw people going to work on that on Twitter last night, too, saying, I don't have a problem with the water bottle throwing. That's emotion. I would love to be for, you know, play for a GM that does that. To me, I don't know. And Staggy said this comment in one of our final get togethers at the end of the season. Actually, I think it was just in a text a couple weeks ago. He only used the names because it's who we saw here in Pittsburgh. Could you picture a Craig Patrick or a Ray Shiro throwing water bottles and getting that emotional and fired up? And I know you and I said last week, well, Brian Burke did that kind of stuff, but he wasn't truly the GM here. So Ron Hextall certainly wouldn't throw anything. I mean, he, you know, half the time he was kind of to go weird science on you, Tim. You know, why is Ron Hextall standing catatonic in a closet?
That's a reference I wasn't expecting today, but a good one nonetheless. You know, one name that does intrigue me is Matthew Darche, the assistant GM from Tampa. I just think if you've got some Tampa Bay Lightning pixie dust on you, I want to talk to you.
I would agree with that. And he has, you know, he's had time to kind of study under a really good management group there, going back a number of years here. I mean, Steve Yzerman did wonderful work. Julian Brisebois, I mean, the stuff, you know what you wish you had was Julian Brisebois, because of the way he's been able to manage the Lightning. He's doing exactly what the Fenway people wanted you to do here. He still has some prospects in his organization. I mean, I know it's not high-end stuff, but he pretty much said at the trade deadline, these picks, you know, they're not going to pan out by the time I need them to. We're trying to build around this core we have right here and win championships right now, right here. And he still had a really good hockey team. I mean, Tampa Bay was among the best in the league going into the playoffs. I mean, they look like they could have done some damage, but it didn't work for them. I mean, it's the same thing with the Penguins. They played so much hockey in the last handful of years that they needed to kind of probably get some rest. And I think that wore them out just as much as anything else. So if you could get somebody with some of that pixie dust, as you mentioned, on him, I think he knows kind of how to do what you need him to do in this situation, while at the same time still identifying talent and moving into the future.
Brian Metzer, Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. So if it's not Dubas, does that then ruin the Larry Brooks grand scheme of Dubas coming to Pittsburgh, firing Mike Sullivan, and Sullivan going to New York so then Sheldon Keefe can come to Pittsburgh and coach the Penguins? Or more to the point, just so that Larry Brooks can get Mike Sullivan to New York.
Yeah, he seems to want that to happen badly. And I mean, I know
I don't know why a beat writer would want Mike Sullivan. Not that he's a bad quote. I mean, after games, sometimes he can be a good quote, but he's not warm and fuzzy. He's not jokey and easy to get along with. He's very distant. He keeps the media at more than an arm's length away. I don't know why that would be a beat writer's dream per se. And it seems like Brooks wants this to happen. Like, he floated that story out there and then he doubled down on it again.
I look at it this way. Maybe it's this, Tim. If you look at most of our media scribes and brethren that we're buddies with or have known over the years, their sources tend to be assistant coaches and people like that in organizations. So maybe it makes you wonder if when Sully was an assistant in New York, if he leaked a little info from time to time to Larry Brooks, and maybe he has an affinity or an affection with him. Now, that said, though, most of these same media people that I know and have had assistant coaches as their sources, once that guy became the guy, he stopped feeding them information. So
right.
Does Brooks not realize that the head guy,
he does by now. I'm sure he's well aware of that dynamic.
Yeah. I mean, and Mike Sullivan's not somebody that seems like he likes the media very much at all. I mean, he doesn't want to give you anything. So in the role that he'll be in there, I don't know that that would work. And I didn't get to hear you and Madden yesterday for your get together. I don't know if Mads floated the whole trade scenario that he did a little column on, but
yeah, he did.
That gets intriguing, right?
Yeah, we brainstormed that. We workshopped that live on the podcast, to be frank with you. Cause we were talking about it and you know, if that's the way that they're going to concoct this, I mean, Mark's got a point, then why not just trade Sullivan and ask for compensation?
And that kind of stuff, it happens so infrequently, but it can happen. I don't think that that will happen. I honestly don't think that even regardless of the GM that is hired, I don't see Sully getting released in any way this season. I think that the Fenway people did that extension with him with the full belief that he would be the coach. And then right away, you're kind of off on the wrong foot with your new GM because, hey, you're handcuffed. You have to keep this guy at least for part of a year or a year. I mean, they don't want to pay him through 2027. So I guess that would be one way to do it, Tim. If you did one out from under, trade him to the New York Rangers, who would gladly take him. And then you don't have to worry about paying him to not work, et cetera. So it's going to be very intriguing on all fronts here, because I believe, and from people I've talked to, that Mike Sullivan comes into this situation kind of in a power vacuum himself. Like he's not pulling the strings on the GM hunt by any means. And I don't believe that was ever the case. However, he has a lot more authority and power than the average coach would have with an incoming general manager.
Respect my authority.
Exactly.
Now that's a reference that I can't expect from you at just about any point. Hopefully they keep churning out material for the next 10 to 20 years. I don't think it's ever going to get old.
All those guys have ever had to do, Tim. They don't, another career lined up.
They did Book of Mormon.
They did the movies.
They did Team America World Police.
Yes. But I mean, it's been very quiet movie wise for them for years now.
Well, I mean, once you do Team America World Police and you have, you know, puppets pooping on each other's chests, where do you go from there? I mean, that's the zenith. That's, if you don't get the Oscar for that, you're just not going to get it.
Did you ever see Cannibal the Musical? That was one of the early things that you got to check that out too. That it's essentially one of those, like, we're stranded in the woods, so we start eating each other things in the pioneer days. So it's kind of
well, Mets, let's make the always easy transition from cannibalizing oneself to the hockey playoffs, which I think is kind of what's been going on with the way the rules have been interpreted. Did you want to see more of a suspension for Pietrangelo?
I did. I thought that was a premeditated, ugly play that, you're trying to sell the game. You're wondering why the league isn't apt to, or why the ESPN isn't real quick to take a 10:30 game and put it in prime time. Maybe that speaks exactly to it, that they don't want that kind of thing happening. I mean, a regular season baseball game the other night just beat, you know, a game seven, essentially, or if I'm not mistaken, or a game six, one or the other. They were a few hundred thousand more viewers for the baseball game on Sunday night. So I hated it. I didn't like that play. I was surprised it was just the one game. And I thought it was interesting that he came out and tried to like spin it as, you know, they were doing a lot of premeditated stuff and they were, you know, essentially, I heard you were running your mouth about me out there. So I came at you with my stick. You know, I didn't really care for that too much. And I mean, I know Connor McDavid's on that roster, Tim. But truth be told, in the series, Leon Draisaitl was their best player. And you went at their best player with a whack in a situation that didn't need to happen. The puck was away. It was late in a hockey game. You're losing. You have an empty net. You're trying to come back from, what was it, 4-1 at the time, something like that. And he just whacked him. I mean, they're lucky he wasn't. I mean, we may find out that he was significantly injured and he still played the next game. But that was a scenario. I just hated seeing that. I didn't like it at all.
Let's get to the remaining teams in the playoffs right now. We're at the conference final round. We've got the Vegas Golden Knights and the Dallas Stars out west, Carolina Hurricanes and Florida Panthers in the east. Man, do I love myself some Original Six hockey.
I guess so, depending on which year you're looking at, Tim, it can still be Original Six.
I mean, yeah, wow.
The Original Six of the 2000s, or, you know.
Florida, Carolina, and Vegas, and then Dallas is like, you know, they're the most established franchise of the bunch. Well, is that right? When did they went to Dallas before Florida.
Right after they went to Dallas, right after losing to the Pens, essentially in 92, right? Or 91. Didn't they shortly thereafter go?
So the
maybe in the next season.
Maybe the longest, most established franchise of that bunch. The Stars are plus 122 to win that series. I'm actually going to take, well, let me come back to that. I do like the Panthers against the Hurricanes at plus 105. That's, I feel better about the East. In the West, like, I had the Stars at the start of the playoffs. I said either them or Edmonton will come out of the West. And I was, as the playoffs are starting, feeling better and better about Dallas. Ottinger, though, even though he played pretty well in Game 7, makes me nervous with the way he played in that last series. And Vegas just keeps winning.
That's the thing. I mean, every time you go to count Vegas out, they take care of business. And they, to me, I mean, they have a lot of what you need to win. You got scoring. The goaltending is the big question. I mean, is Aiden Hill going to be able to go up against Jake Ottinger and get the work done? I don't know. I mean, he looked pretty good in getting him to this point when he's had to play. So it's a possibility if they play the right way in front of him and they're good defensively. But all of that said, Jake Ottinger was near unbeatable in Game 7. He had a couple posts, but that's no harm, no foul, obviously, because that just means he gave them nothing but the post. I don't know that he's doing that every night because he's had a couple of weak games in the playoffs. But I think the goaltending is the difference maker. That is the X factor in that series, because you're going to have a lot of run and gun offense coming at them from Vegas, and you're going to have Dallas try to take advantage of mistakes and slow it down enough that their young forwards and Roope Hintz can kind of do what they do, which is score goals in humongous situations, and that would take it down to the goaltending. So for me, I kind of, based on the experience that they've had in recent years and the emergence of their young players, I feel like Dallas could still potentially get it done with the work of Jake Ottinger to move into the Stanley Cup final. And Florida has a team at Destiny Field too, Tim. So we'll see how the cup shakes out, and we can predict that later. But I think Dallas might, with Jake Ottinger, if he plays the way he did, they may have enough to get by Vegas. So I'd feel I'd feel okay with putting some money on them.
I think Carolina's been really gutty to get this far, but I think the Panthers are the good team that they were a year ago in the regular season, not the team that barely backed in because the Penguins gagged. You know, I look at plus 240 for the Hurricanes to win the cup, Vegas at plus 260, Dallas at plus 295, and then the Panthers at plus 320. Those aren't astronomical odds against the Panthers. It's pretty incremental, 1 through 4. But I still think there's pretty good payout. Like, you know, I feel good about them against Carolina, and then, you know, straight up, would I probably bet on whoever is in the West? Yeah, I would. But if that's three rounds in a row for the Panthers, maybe I wouldn't. You know, like, let's see how they take care of Carolina if they get that far. Because to my previous point, this very well may be the team that we saw in the regular season a year ago where people wouldn't have been surprised to see him go this far.
Yeah, I agree, Tim. I mean, but they have so much going right for them now. Sergei Bobrovsky has suddenly become, you know, he's on another level right now. He's played so well. He's earning his contract for probably the first time in several years. Looks really solid back there. They have layers of guys that can come at you. They have great depth players. And of course, the ballad of Matthew Tkachuk now, it is still being written. I mean, this guy, he was an MVP candidate. I think the league really wants to anoint him as one of their faces at this point. That's the impression I'm getting, just based on the accolades that he's receiving, and rightly so. So when you have all of that, I think that they finally figured out who they are. Maybe they had some issues with that this season because they were so different than they were last year in terms of their team structure and how it was built. They're a little bit more blue collar and grittier, yet they still have the skill level with now this goaltender who's playing so well. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them, you know, finish off the climb here and take care of business, get through the Eastern final and get yourself into the Stanley Cup. And then from there, I think it's anybody's ball game, but they just as much as anybody else have been doubted so long here. No one gave them a chance against Boston. No one gave them a chance against Toronto. And I don't know that was the right assessment, just based on the fact that we see upsets so often, and we see this team with the talent that they bring and the way that they play hockey, they make your life so difficult in your own zone. I think that's going to be Carolina's issue with them, is their forecheck is just going to be so strong against them and smacking around their defensemen down at, like, when they go back to collect the puck, they're going to get lit up by Florida's forwards, and I think that's going to be a difference maker there.
Mets will do it again next week, and then we're off to Sonic Temple in Columbus.
I'm anxious for it, my friend. We've been talking about this for how long? It's right around the corner, and I don't know. It's finally here. We've talked about this particular festival too, Tim, for what, 5 years? Because every year we weren't sure what the schedule would be. Would we be able to do it? Well, the Penguins helped us out. So all this means is next Thursday, when we're taking in Tool and Godsmack, the Penguins will announce their new general manager.
And it'll be pouring outside.
Yes, let's hope not. And let's hope that no one loses a catalytic converter at the majestic Red Roof Inn.
All right, that'll do it for us. Mets and I will be back next week. This is Breakfast with Ben's podcast, and you can always find it here at Trib Live.